What is up, gods and legends? He is Jay King from The Athletic. I am Sam Jam Packard from the World Wide Web. We are still potable. And sometimes people make mistakes. And you know what, Jay? I started this episode with a huge mistake. This is not a God pod. This is the one free episode. And some people might be watching this on CLNS YouTube channel. And thus, we are brought to you by Prize Picks. Use promo code CLNS and you'll get a $100 deposit match. So this is the free episode. We are still potable. We are on Patreon Monday through Friday. Go to patreon.com/stillpotable and you can get us Monday through Friday. I thought this was a God pod for our mid-tier members, but no, this is for everyone.
We just discussed that in the chat, like no longer than 15 minutes.
That's ago. What I'm saying. It's pretty easy. You get into March of the NBA season, you can let your foot off the gas. That's what I didn't have the right focus. And I think I've kind of suffered the same affliction the Celtics did. I didn't have the excuse. I mean, I guess B-Rob was out. He's the equivalent of Drew Holiday and Derek White.
He's our backcourt.
Well, what role do I play then? What are our roles on the pod? If Derek White is the backcourt, what would you say you are?
I mean, I'm like Tatum and Brown, I would say.
I knew you were going to say that as soon as I asked the question. You couldn't even give me one of them.
Porzingis, I feel like you might be a wink guy. And like,
wink
like
if
people were chanting your name at the Garden, you'd give the nice little whatever he does, a little fist pump. So
that's fair. I would wink. I would give a fist pump. I would play it up to the crowd.
You're just a happy guy. He seems like a very happy guy. He's always seems satisfied. You just seem like a happy guy.
And you're just going to say you're the both number one star and number two star of the podcast, the kind of foundation of everything, the engine that makes everything run, and the two guys who just can't close down.
And I'm Joe Mazzulla. I'm the coach as well.
An absolute maniac, I would say.
Yeah.
I do like.
And I'm Brad Stevens.
Okay, well, now you're just.
I orchestrated this.
Okay, I'm Al Horford then. We can just all claim different things that we're gorgeous eyes. Like, what are we doing?
What makes you Al Horford?
Gorgeous eyes, wisdom, been doing this a long time. Everyone looks out, looks to me to kind of set the bar. Consistency, toughness. I love to tell people when to take a timeout. You know,
Al Horford. Big flincher on rebounds
in certain situations. All right. Enough of this nonsense. Enough of the tomfoolery. Enough of the ballyhoo. I don't care about the Celtics giving up a 30-point lead. That happens in the NBA, especially the modern NBA. Three-point shooting happens. They only made 1 3 in the second half. The Krejci, I'm assuming he's from the Czech Republic because that's the only context I know that name from, goes wild from three. The Hawks start playing
like hot. Krejci was real hot.
He was. And so the comeback part does not bother me. The part that bothers me is the late game execution, because I feel like earlier in the season they've had similar, just terrible offensive possessions. And the Celtics, when you ask them about after the game, they're like, yeah, we sucked there. We need to work on it. And I like their Kaizen approach. I like their growth mindset. You have to embrace your failure. But part of that is correcting it the next time that situation occurs. And so the Jason Tatum possession, where he just did a decent amount of dribbling and then gave up the turnover, that led to the Bogdanovich three on the other end.
What about the 8-second violation?
That was also not great. Really indicative of the slow pace they were playing. And then with 50 seconds left, the Jaylen Brown nonsense possession, where it looked like him and like Tatum and Porzingis were doing a little bit of something off ball, but it didn't materialize anything. It was just Jaylen Brown dribbling for 24 seconds. At some point, I'd like them to try something different. I feel like they have a capacity to do so. I feel like they've had some moments where at least it's just Tatum going to the rim. But those possessions were the ones that were, I would say, frustrating. They didn't cause deep panic in my eyes. But it's like, what are we doing here, fellas? What? Why? We've been doing this for, what, many years now. Why is that kind of the thing that we end up with?
It's like, how many times do you have to hear, just play faster? That's it. Just play faster, play with some pace, keep it up in the fourth quarter. Don't let off the gas. Make sure that you're operating at a high level, just with pace. Because if they play with pace, a lot of that stuff just goes away. Then you're not dribbling the ball 20 times in a row. Then you're not waiting till the end of the shot clock and putting up some bullshit. You're getting into stuff. You're getting into actions. And when the Celtics get into actions, they have enough talent that they can just create advantages, and they can take advantage of advantages.
Take advantage of advantages. I think it's just they take advantages.
They capitalize on advantages.
There you go.
But you have to play fast to get to all that stuff. And to me, what separates their team is that they have so many threats, that they have so many guys that you have to cover, that you have to worry about, that are threats out there. They should not be a team that goes to ISO late in shot clock. They should not be a team that just runs the same set over and over, unless you can't stop it. But they should be a team that like incorporates everybody, puts stress on your defense because you can't guard everybody. And when they go slow, that takes all of that away. And you can load up and you can force them into bad shots. And they allow themselves to be guarded sometimes because they fall back into that. And obviously, like, they weren't at their best. Once they were up 30, they just kind of just poo was running down their legs. And they pooed themselves. That's what I was trying to say.
I know. I think we got that, Jay. Thank you for clarifying.
But, like, it's just too many times they've done this where their issue repeatedly is that they just play too slow and they get into stuff too late in the shot clock, and it leaves them with no option other than a fadeaway bullshit ISO. So just fix that. Fix that, and you'll have a great chance to win a championship. Just fix that.
I'm fine with isolations if they come after them running something to get a mismatch. Like against the Cavs, they got the mismatch they wanted with Jason Tatum isolating against Darius Garland. I don't think it was the best shot, but like, I'm going
to
take
that. They had to go earlier, though.
They did.
That was the dumbest shot because it was so late. That's why it was a dumb shot. It was the right matchup to pick on, but they went so fucking slow that they left themselves with one out, and that was to make a contested fadeaway bullshit shot.
I agree. I was mainly arguing that they should have some sort of process to try and get into something. That is what their main strength is this year, is being able to exploit mismatches. I think they do run a decent amount of isolation, but it's after identifying what that mismatch is and getting it to the right guy, whether that be Kristaps Porzingis against the small, or maybe a smaller guy against Tatum and Brown, or a big against Tatum and Brown. You have to do something, and as you noted, do it with pace and get into it, so you have an opportunity to make
and
plays.
And do it with physicality, too. Like, that play, the Jaylen play you were talking about, Kristaps was trying to set a screen and got bumped off his line, and it just didn't work.
I had a crazy thought today, and tell me if I'm an idiot. I know you'd be willing to do so.
Yes. Yes, you are.
All right. Outside of that initial kind of assessment of my intelligence, has Kristaps been a little bit worse over like the last month and a half. I'm going based on eye test alone. I feel like he's been less of a physical presence and he can be pushed around a little bit more when he catches against these supposed mismatches. Am I crazy? Is this an eye test that's fooling me? What say you about
his efficiency has gone down. I don't know if it's partially because the NBA has called fewer fouls recently. Obviously, there's been a lot about that trend. But I think, honestly, I think that's a good thing for him to go through now because he hasn't played playoff basketball in a while. The last time he did, he was on a Dallas Mavericks team. They told him to stay in the corner. And that was it.
They told him not to post up. There was like a whole Rick Carlisle thing. Like, we don't want him to do that at all because he's 0.5 points per possession for every post up.
It was 0.81, but yeah.
You are a basketball nerd.
But yeah. So I think it's good for him to deal with the physicality now, to be able to play through it. And it's obviously not playoff level right now, but the fact that the NBA loosened things up a little bit now, because they do loosen it up in the playoffs. You can always get away with more physicality. You can always be tougher. And he's going to have to play through that. And he's going to have to be able to be effective in the low post against very good defenders. Even the wing defenders will be big and strong, and they'll be trying to push him around. And so, yeah, I agree with you. He hasn't been at the same level where it was just an auto bucket when he got the ball earlier in the season. He's still been pretty effective, though. And it's just like, this is all stuff that he can use later on, to me.
I think he is, it's a bold take, but I think he's going to be such a major key for them in the playoffs on the offensive end, just because I feel like the one way you really slow down this Boston Celtics team is they're so good when you put two on the ball of like their ball movement. They have play five great shooters. They're going to knock down threes if you commit two to the ball. One way to not commit to is to switch everything. And if you switch everything, Chris Tapps has to dominate so much in those matchups that they're reluctant to kind of just switch a small onto Chris Tapps. And I think he has to be consistently good and aggressive in those matchups to make it so that's just not like the basic shell defense that the Heat, I said the Heat, but like, because they did a very good job of switching against the Celtics in the past 2 years in the playoffs. But you have to be able to punish teams who do that. And I think he's key to that. And so I hope you're right that he's getting these kind of reps now with a more physical defense, because I think like it really opens up their offense if teams are just not able to switch.
Yeah. If he's pulverizing switches, that just takes them to another level. It does. And so, yeah, I mean, he's a key to beating some of the, not junk defenses, but some of the more effective defenses that have kind of taken them out of their identity over the past couple off seasons. So, or the past couple playoffs. So yeah, he has to be at a high level. And I mean, he had the injury. He had a minutes restriction for like a game or two after that. So probably still trying to get some rhythm back to some extent. But yeah, like, His ability to rise to the playoff intensity is one of the question marks that I have. How is that going to look when teams are getting up under him, when they are forcing him further out, when they are making it harder for him to get to the spots where he's so effective? How does it all work? Because we haven't seen him in the playoffs in a long time. And when he was in the playoffs, it was a totally different role. And at that point, like, he just didn't have the post-up game that he does now. So he's going to be kind of learning on the fly, I think, how to diagnose and beat some of the coverages.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's a tournament season or the fight for a playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you could turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
I think it's also going to be interesting to see how willing the Jays and I guess the rest of the team are to kind of play through him. And then if he struggles, are they willing to continue to play through him, knowing that that matchup is so important for them? Or if he struggles early, do they go away from it? Which I think would be a mistake. So I think it's
yeah. What's that trust level like? And I think it should be high based on the way Kristaps has helped them during the regular season. I think it should be high based on everything Joe Mazzulla has stressed to the players this year about how important Kristaps will be to figuring out those coverages. But it's one thing to say that now in the regular season when they're on pace for 65 wins. And it's another thing when you're down 2-1 in a playoff series and you can either, ISO against a big or just take a dribble out and throw it down to Kristaps down low. What's your choice going to be then? I don't know. But they know what they should do. They know everything Mazzulla has told them about trusting each other and trusting Porzingis. And I think the way Porzingis – I also think he's a gamer. He's not someone who's going to shy away from the playoff spotlight. I think he's going to love the playoff spotlight. I think he's going to really relish it. So that's another thing I think is important to keep in mind here is, he's wanted this spotlight again after playing in Washington. He's wanted it after being in Dallas and things didn't go really the way that he wanted. So I think it's going to be pretty important to him to play well in those moments. And I think he's the type of competitor that will really appreciate that.
Plus, it's much easier to fist pump and wink at the crowd when you have a good performance in the Garden as opposed to a bad one. So I think all interested parties would like to see him do well.
Big winker.
Jay, we're going to play a game right now. It's going to be a bit of a role play. You are going to be
role playing right now?
Joe Mazzulla.
Okay.
Celtics have 10 games left in the season. What are you working on in those final 10 games? Because it feels like maybe the brain trust over there at the Boston Celtics, they're not really going to let you play a full game with all your starters, all your full lineup, prioritizing rest. So you have all these mix and match lineups out there. Maybe you get wild, you throw Springer out there for the final 8 minutes or in the fourth quarter. But considering the kind of lineup restrictions, what are you looking to see out of your ball club over these final 10 games that are essentially meaningless?
I want mindset. I want mentality. I want success to look different every night for every player.
You are Joe Mazzulla.
Those are the three things he says no matter what.
Getting more spacing quickly.
Spacing. I feel like spacing, he said that more last year.
Oh, he's hit it a number of times this year.
But last year it was spacing. Now it's mindset, motherfucker. We need to be tough.
Last year he said I forgot to bring up defense every day. Do you think there's anything he's forgotten to bring up so far this year that he maybe is regretting?
No, he preaches the shit that he wants this year. He is hammering home those points, probably to an annoying extent. I think I liked that they started big yesterday against Atlanta. Just try it out. Why not? You have the one seed clinched. You have plenty of games where you're going to be shorthanded. Try new shit. See what it looks like with basically Jason Tatum at point guard. See what it looks like. And I think he's done that with different front courts. He's just, I don't know if experiment is the right word, but he's definitely gone to stuff that they haven't seen very much to try to figure some stuff out. And I would want to, I mean, as bad as that Atlanta game was, great opportunity to emphasize all the stuff we talked about and all the stuff that the coaching staff has stressed to these guys. Like, it is unforgivable to get an 8-second violation in the NBA in the final minutes of a game. Like, just fucking dribble the thing past half court. Just play with a little pace. Just play a little faster. So, Joe, I mean, he's done a great job. And did you watch, I didn't watch listen to the whole podcast yet with Draymond Green and Drew Holiday, but I saw some of the clips floating online. And I thought it was interesting what Drew was saying. You haven't seen it.
I've probably seen the same clips as you. Did he say something about Joe?
So he was talking about his defensive role this season and just talking about how different it was. And he was saying basically, like, in Milwaukee, when he was in New Orleans, he did the same thing every possession. He was guarding the ball. He was forcing, like, trailing a guy over a screen, funneling him to either Anthony Davis in New Orleans or Brooke Lopez in Milwaukee, and was just kind of like, that was his role. And now he said the Celtics have just weaponized him differently. And he said, you know, sometimes I'm on a non-shooter. Sometimes I'm on Joel Embiid. Sometimes I'm on, like, just all sorts of different players. And he said, like, the level of thinking that goes into his role now is just totally different, and that he really enjoys it. And I think that's part of what Joe has stressed, like, since he got the job, really, is basically, like, everybody has to think the game together, and they all have to be on the same page. And he kind of has, like, I don't want to say it's like Phil Jackson with the triangle offense, but Phil Jackson with the triangle offense, the whole thing was like, we have to work in unison, and we have to, and that's like the way to maximize a team. And I think Steve Kerr has kind of done it with the Warriors, is like, he doesn't run a lot of high pick and roll. He likes to play the game where they use everybody. And obviously it helps to have Stephen Curry. It helps to have Michael Jordan, but they want everybody to think the game together and be on the same page. And they think that's the way to maximize the team. And I think Joe, he doesn't approach it the same way as those guys do. They don't have the same offense those guys do. They don't have Michael Jordan or Stephen Curry, but just the thinking of the game has been something that he stressed. And so I thought it was interesting what Drew said about that and just how different his role is now. And he said he never really had to be the communicator before, because his role was just like, guard the ball, stop the ball, funnel the ball, and that was it. And now he's kind of being the quarterback, and he really enjoys it from what he was saying.
The Drew piece is so interesting because he is, I feel like, really flown under the
radar. Don't call it a dead arm, by the way.
Dead arm?
Don't call it a dead arm.
Don't call it a comeback? I've been here for years. What should I call it?
I mean, he initially called it a dead arm, I believe, and then he said it wasn't a dead arm. So,
but he didn't give it something to replace it with. He just said, this is not a dead arm.
Yeah.
Non-living appendage. What, I don't know what else you would call it. It sounds like a dead arm, but I don't know.
It's a living arm. His arm's alive.
Good reason not to call it a dead arm then. His just role on this team, I feel like, has been so under-celebrated with how great the Celtics have been. Obviously, he's taken a back seat on the offensive end, and he has his crazy three-point shooting in the corner, which I think we talked about, his crazy just attempts from three, his step back, which he can clearly knock down. Early in the year, it was just the constant lefty layups attempts that didn't really work. But we've talked about the Porzingis role in this. Drew in the playoffs, in whatever role he has, but just as a stabilizing force and a guy who can think the game, I think he's going to play a major, major impact on this team. and just like he's won a finals before. He's been through it. I saw a clip on him on that Draymond podcast where he's like, there's just always a moment in the playoffs where shit goes wrong and you have to have the right mindset. I think he's going to be a major stabilizing impact on this team. And maybe I don't want to denigrate Marcus Smart, but maybe a guy
you're
out there
denigrate him now.
Days, I'm only doing it relative to Jrue Holiday. I think Marcus Smart was certainly capable of some crazy plays, but I don't know if his necessarily was a stabilizing force for the Celtics. I feel like Jrue has the same level of potential for just like outstanding defensive play or outstanding hustle play. But he doesn't really need the ball on offense. He's going to hang out in the corner. And I feel like he's just a real undersung hero potentially for what this like team can be in the playoffs. And everyone's talking about like freaking out about the late game execution. But I just feel like this team with Kristaps and with Jrue is totally different than any team the Celtics have kind of put forward in the playoffs.
It's not the same. It's not remotely the same. They don't have the same issues. They don't have anyone you can help off of. Like Marcus Smart would make threes sometimes, and sometimes he would hurt teams for leaving him. But if like you could leave him, you could. If you leave Jrue Holiday in the corner, that's bad news. If you leave Derek White the way that he's shooting now, you're in trouble. If you leave any of the other guys, you're just a moron. So, yeah, they don't have as many flaws. Kristaps changes things. And then I think just there's been a lot of improvement of guys on the roster of just becoming more all-around players. And so, yeah, to be afraid for the Celtics because of what happened in 2022, I get it. I understand it. To be afraid of them because of what happened last year against the Heat, yeah, like it's going to happen. People still have those fears, but this team is different. And that said, if they do go out in a similar fashion again,
don't even need to bring it up.
With
don't
this roster,
need to bring it up.
Something's wrong. Something's wrong.
Yeah, if they're gonna lose in a different fashion. I'd rather them be swept than, Actually, no, that's not true. I forget I even said anything. Right now, we're gonna go to our mainest man, one of the legends. That's the highest tier on the Patreon. Gambling Grant is here, and as a legend, he gets to join us for all the broadcasts. Grant, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Doing
well.
Great. What do you feel about Jonte Porter, my man?
Jonte Porter. Can't say I have too many.
You haven't seen the scandal, have you?
Is that the Raptors player?
You call yourself Gambling Grant, and you don't know about the Jonte Porter?
Okay, not living up to the name.
He's the Raptors player that's under investigation for gambling, like leaving games a little early, just whenever his point total was at like 7.5, and
faking an injury to hit the under. No big deal.
Making an eye injury. He does have his own private Discord where he gives out investment tips, so he does like to find that edge. But maybe, as they say in like the hedge fund term, he's finding that dark edge. Maybe he's playing a little fast and loose with regulations.
You know, with like how loose gambling is right now, and like the NBA is just promoting it now, going to be on their app, I'm sure you're going to hear a couple of stories every month, but I respect it.
You respect it. A lot of respect for Jonte Porter's approach. Shaving points, who cares?
I mean, he's not on a big time contract, so got to make that money. I did want to say,
yeah, we derailed you there with the Porter talk. So sorry.
No worries. I do have to say, I'm in the fight for my life right now in my dynasty playoffs, and ooh, Jimmy Butler taking the night off for a illness just really makes me want to beat the Heat first round even more. Because that guy, he's so frustrating.
So that's all you got? You just came on to tell us that Jimmy Butler boned your fantasy squad?
He might be. No, but what I wanted to say was I really like – I don't think there's a lot to worry about with this team. It's funny because I was listening to the earlier episodes that you guys came out with, and the Drew Holiday trade was one of the – obviously the big topic at the beginning of the new Still Potable podcast. And talking about,
I like that you're going back and listening to the first, the early.
I do love that. That's awesome.
Doing the full library.
I figured I might as well get it all in while I can. Not that I'm going to be leaving or anything, but
be like Grant. Listen to Still Potable. Subscribe today. Patreon.com/StillPotable.
I wanted to. I needed to hear from like why the Anything Potable became Still Potable. That background story and. The introduction theme song. I needed to see when that came into play. So I'm just getting my Still Potable history up to date.
Important. I'm glad you caught up.
I love that. Yeah.
Thank you. Still got a lot to work with, but I still think this team is like completely different.
Did we say smart stuff about the Drew Holiday trade at the time?
Yeah. I mean, I was just, I got up to right after the Bucks reporter was on, just like talking about how everybody likes Drew Holiday, no bad reviews.
And how he has the strongest core of any human.
The strongest core, yeah. he's the most like underrated player in the league. And it's funny that he was just on Draymond Green's podcast talking about like how he plays defense now, like just completely different than he did with the Bucks. So I think all the talking points were hit. Like it's showing that he's just a game changer when he's in there.
And he's just a calming presence. Even though he does some crazy shit like once or twice a game.
It's the calm of chaos. You need some sort of chaos element there,
but,
and he'll
but
bring
most
it.
Of the time it's not chaos. It's just he does his job. He doesn't care about any of the nonsense. He just wants to win. He wants to play whatever role they ask of him. He guards any type of player and is in the right spot all the time, competing all the time. Like, you don't have to worry about a thing with Drew Holiday except the occasional, like, nonsensical pull-up three. And that's about it. Appreciate you coming on, Grant. Thanks
anytime,
for coming.
Thank you guys
dude.
For having me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Grant, one of the legends, always appreciated him checking out, you know. And you know what? Go back and listen to it. He probably had an excellent analysis about Drew Holiday.
We got a voicemail here.
Oh, you're right. Are you ready to play it? I didn't know we had voicemails.
We got a voicemail.
Let's hear it.
I don't even know who it's from.
I'm guessing it's Josh B.
No, it's not Josh B.
Oh, I hope it's the weird guy who just plays us soundtracks from or audiobooks. That was a fun little stage.
I know I get roasted in the chat for negativity, but.
Oh, it's my guy AJ.
These guys, there's three coaches. I don't think people talk about this enough. Three coaches have had bad balls slow, whatever. They slow down the ball. They don't pass the ball. They execute horribly. I can't even speak. In late game situations. And I love my guys, but like, it's crazy. Like, is this just who they are? Like, there's just no change. Like, a coach can't even, like, work with them or, like, make them do other crap. Like, it's literally been Brad, Ime, Joe. Like, no change. And people are, like, blame coaching for late game execution. But it's maybe just them. And that makes me really sad. And even when they're the best team in the NBA, it makes me sad that this stuff happens. They just keep having bad possessions to end close games, and they've had a lot of good ones too. But it's not a surprise. It's just reality with them, and it's like maybe the only thing to be negative about. But it's gonna bite them in the ass if it all comes in the playoffs, if they're in a situation where they it matters what they do. So I don't know. Yeah,
I love it.
That was such a sad voicemail.
Yeah, this is just the voicemail.
You could tell he was somber.
Yeah, he's using the voicemail line to vent and deal with all his worries, his sorrow.
He couldn't even speak for a while. He was so devastated.
Yeah, no, I thought he was high out of his gourd to begin with, but no, he was just deeply caught up in his emotions. Here's what I'll say. I don't think we can claim that Brad is a Brad Stevens issue. What, the 2020 bubble Eastern Conference playoffs? We're going to say that when Jason Tatum was 22 years old and Jaylen Brown was 23, and they really had no business being there because Daniel Tice was their starting center. I don't think we can talk about that. The Ime Udoka team that made it to the finals and just happened to – I don't think the issue necessarily in the finals was their late-game offense. I just think they
Yes, it was. Oh, yes, it was.
It was not the issues. They had
they were up in the fourth quarter of game four.
Yes.
And just basically never scored again.
It's not necessarily it was like the final four
it
minutes.
Happened again, I believe, in game five. Just the same shit.
It's not believe the same me. Exact issue they're talking about now. The issue they're talking about now is like the final 2 minutes of the game. And like being very slow. They turned the ball over a lot. That was also a defensive-minded team where they did not have spacing because they had Al Horford and Robert Williams on the court at all times, and they did not finish with Derek White. I think it's a completely different team. At some part of the day, it's on the players, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Like, I think Joe Mazzulla is not the one calling out do nothing as they run down the court. And so I don't think it's like...
Make sure you take more than 8 seconds getting it across half court, boys.
Yeah, I don't think he has hand signals for that. And so, I don't know. I don't think it's like reasonable to blame it on the coaches. I think it's Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Yes, I agree with you. I think this is my guy, AJ, who is filling the chat with negativity, which I love to see. You got to get different perspectives in the Patreon chat. But now I see that negativity came from a deep place of sadness. And I just want to be there like, the team's 57-15. They're played better offensive basketball than they ever have in the history of these Boston Celtics, not the whole franchise. I'm sure there's been actually in terms of numbers wise, I don't think there's been a better offense.
There hasn't been the entire history of the NBA.
That's what I was going for there. I understand the frustration, but we're talking about a March basketball game. And maybe we can revisit this in the playoffs if it happens again, but I just have kind of faith in them to correct it because as good as they were last year, they've had just a better process for the entire season this year. And it goes back to what Jay is saying. It's like thinking the game. They've been trained very well and have executed for the most part very well this year to kind of just recognize what the defense is giving them and make the according adjustment and kind of take it and make the right play. And albeit there's been some moments where they haven't played fast enough, but I just think in the playoffs, when the games get more serious, they're going to make the adjustments. Maybe it's blind faith of me doing that. Maybe it's just wishful thinking, but I don't know. I just can't blame it on Joe Mazzulla at this point.
I love how at the end of just like being so sad, you're just like, it's really the only thing you can get mad about with them. And it's true, but in every loss, it seems like the same shit happens. And it takes some weird shit to beat the Celtics most of the time. I think
miss a bunch of threes. For the Celtics need to miss a bunch of threes for it to be like a close game.
Of the three losses since February 1st, the Nuggets game was the most normal. The Cavs game was just a disgusting
Dean Wade. Dean Wade.
The Hawks game was just got up 30, fucked around and found out.
Krejci is the I've always said Krejci is the Czechoslovakian Dean Wade. I've long said that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the people are saying.
You got anything else, Jay?
It really is hard to put everything into perspective with this team. Because if you look objectively at everything, they are one of the best teams in the history of basketball. They are just stomping teams. They doesn't matter whether they play good teams, bad teams, at home, on the road, second leg of a back-to-back, more rest. Like, they have just kicked the shit out of teams. But because there are the scars, and because you don't know how much the past will still matter, even with this new roster, even with Chris Aspergis, even with Jrue Holiday, even with Joe Mazzulla, a much better coach in year two than he was in year one, it's hard to put everything in perspective. Like, how much does it matter that they went too slow against the Hawks and didn't close out a game and had some trouble against a bad team? How much does that matter? Especially when Jaden Springer's playing crunch time, when Derek White's out, when Jrue Holiday's out. Should people freak out about that? I get freaking out about it. I get being sad like AJ is. I understand that.
We don't. I just want to say we don't know if it's AJ. I just think it's AJ. Just that guy.
Might be AJ.
Possibly AJ.
Say your name next time, coward. But for real, like, I get being afraid of all that stuff. And it's really hard to win a championship. They're going to have to be fantastic to beat whoever it is that they play throughout the playoffs. But at the same time, like, all the evidence suggests this is a different team. This is a much better team. It's a more complete team. The bench has been fantastic. Peyton Pritchard has just reached another level. So there's a lot of reason to not overlook the hiccups at the end of games, but to put them in perspective and say this could matter, but the preponderance of evidence suggests that's a lawyer word for it.
More than 50%.
The preponderance of evidence.
I would say clear and convincing evidence, even higher standards.
This is the best Celtics team in a long, long time. And we haven't seen a Celtics team this good since Kevin Garnett was around and healthy. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes, but
it really so it comes.
Is, it's hard to talk about, though. It really is. Should we freak out about that shit? I don't fucking know. It's possible we should be freaking out. It's possible that the slow down late game bullshit that cost them a game in Cleveland, that cost them against Atlanta, maybe that's the only thing that matters right now. But it's also possible that them kicking the shit out of teams regularly is what really matters.
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a classic battle between your brain and your heart. And I would say, for Still Podable fans out there, combine the two. Listen to your brain's heart, you know, and fuse between both the objective and the subjective. Be better. You can do both. Use those emotions to guide you towards a greater future and a more prosperous, just moving forward for a better tomorrow. And I think the one way you can do that, really focus your energy on positivity, is by continuing listening to Still Podable. Go to patreon.com. If you're on the YouTubes right now, watching the CLNS YouTubes, go to patreon.com/stillpodable. Subscribe today. This is going to be one hell of a playoff run. You're going to be one a part of the Still Podable community. We have an amazing chat. You can be a legend like Gambling Grant or Josh B and join us for every podcast we do. And so please join us. It's going to be a hell of a postseason run. We appreciate everyone who tuned in on the CLNS YouTube. Again, this is brought to us by the Prize Picks. Go to Prize Picks. Use promo code CLNS, and I think you'll get a $100 deposit match. Ooh. We appreciate everyone who joined us, and we'll be back tomorrow with a huge guest, a huge guest. And so you're going to want to tune in to listen to that. And thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of Still Podable. Still Podable, Still Podable, Still Podable, Still Podable.